It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web.
Live it off the wall.
Where you get the best sports talk and info in New York.
I got a special treat for you this evening. A young man that you all know is Joe the Policeman from the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama. I want you to put your hands together and welcome him to the stage. Big round of applause for Jackson Heights' own
Mr. Chris Shan.
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Shearn.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Off the Wall, the podcast version on YesNetwork.com. I am Chris Shearn. You'll be hearing from our producer and the godfather of YesNetwork.com, Joe Auriemma, in just a bit. But it's time for me to rant again. Oh, happy day. I get to do it once a week, so it's nice when I get to do it. And away we go. Now, I've waited for almost an entire week to get this off of my chest because we taped the last podcast last week, and then the day after we taped it, this story came out. So now I'm going to go off a little bit, and I blogged about it. We'll bring that into the mix as well because I got some positive and negative feedback on the blog, and I want to discuss that with the fans that, you know, thank you for getting there, and thank you for reading the blog, and thank you for your comments, but we have to talk about it a little bit, and that is David Ortiz was on that list back in 2003. So all these Red Sox fans who thought their team was pristine without incident, all these Red Sox fans that say in 2003, the Yankees' victory in Game 7 of the ALCS was tainted because Giambi's home run should not have counted. Hold on now. Not only do we have confirmation that Ortiz is on that list, Manny Ramirez is on that list. So your 3 and 4 hitters who had a lot of big hits in 2004 during that comeback. That, remember that 3-0 comeback that you had? If Giambi's home run doesn't count, guess what else doesn't count? Every stinking RBI that Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz accounted for in games 4, 5, 6, and 7. That's where I'm at right now. I am fed up with Boston fans. Your team is just as dirty as the rest of the league was during the quote-unquote steroid era. Just as dirty. And it's just the tip of the iceberg. We still don't have the rest of the names. Some phony list came out. Don't pay any attention to that. But we know Manny was on it, and we know Poppy was on it. And we know now that the Poppy power that was being displayed had a little taint to it. Wasn't clean. Now please, Red Sox fans, stop. Stop with your nonsense. Bill Simmons, your Roid Sox Nation just took a hit. Now you want to sit there and say, well, the Yankees aren't benign from this? You're right. Some Yankees have been caught out as well. Alex Rodriguez, who, by the way, was treated like a criminal on ESPN. Criminal. I haven't seen one damn thing about Ortiz. When it first broke, Peter Gammons made me want to puke. He was sticking up for the guy. Yet A-Rod, when it happened to him, he was demonized. It's not right, okay? And this is the show where the demons go on the red side of the fence. Red Sox Nation, you have been tainted. And now we will welcome in Joe Auriemma, the godfather of YesNetwork.com, to get his thoughts on what has transpired in this past week. Now, you really haven't heard much about it anymore. When A-Rod was in the news, it was in the news for about a month.
Yeah, Chris, when A-Rod, when the news broke that A-Rod had taken PEDs, this was like something that ESPN and every other media outlet could absolutely feast on. We heard about it for months. He's still getting harassed in all of these stadiums. with the big blow-up syringes, Cheater, Aroyd Chance. I mean, he's still feeling the brunt of this. Yet, Manny Ramirez comes back, and Dodger fans and the whole league just forgets that this guy just got suspended for 50 games. Something that Alex Rodriguez never, never did. He never got suspended.
And ESPN glorifies the guy when he hits a home run.
I agree. And you look at David Ortiz, other than the first day that the story came out, which was, you know, end of last week, who the heck even remembers that David Ortiz now has taken performance-enhancing drugs? Because nobody is covering it in the media. And you can say all you want that David Ortiz isn't the player that he used to be. And the bottom line is, he is the main catalyst, one of the main catalysts for the Red Sox going on their run in 2004. He, along with Manny Ramirez, like you said, they're the reason why they went on that 8-game winning streak to win the world title. And then in 2007, same thing. It was those two players at the forefront that won a second world championship for the Red Sox.
And the thing that really gets under my skin is, and this is something Gammon said on ESPN, well, in the Dominican Republic, you know, it's not like it is here. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. Wasn't that the same thing that Alex Rodriguez said?
Right.
But it was different then.
Well, Gammon's is obviously a Boston Red Sox mouthpiece. He always has been. ESPN is always...
Yeah, but why don't people get on ESPN? Why doesn't somebody get on Peter Gammon's? You know, you have people in the New York media calling the Yes Network, quote-unquote, Al Yankazira. I'm not going to mention his name because it's not worth my freaking time, okay? But why doesn't this guy go get on SNY or go get on ESPN or go get on somebody else? You know, they're protecting these guys. Manny Ramirez is being glorified, and the guy just came off, as you said, a 50-game freaking suspension.
Well, that person that you're speaking of, I lost a little respect for him when he's supposed to be a partial voice, and he is on a show on SNY. So where exactly is he coming from? I don't know. But as for ESPN, yeah, you know, they have been critical. They have been criticized by fans throughout the years of being a Boston Red Sox mouthpiece, but nobody in the media has ever brought up the fact that they in fact are a Boston Red Sox mouthpiece.
All right, let's go a little bit further into this. Now, in my blog, this is all I said about Yankee fans and what they should do when the Red Sox come in here this week, and that's act with class. I'm not saying don't boo Ortiz. I'm not saying, you know, don't go all out like he's a Red Sox and boo him for everything he's worth because you just hate the Red Sox with every fiber of your being. I'm just saying, handle yourselves with some type of class. Don't be a typical Bostonian idiot, okay? Go to the games. Realize that you might have kids sitting around you that are there for their first game at Yankee Stadium. And the last thing their mother or father want them to hear is someone being an idiot. Okay, just don't be an idiot. That's all I was saying. I'm not saying you can't boo Ortiz, which someone commented on.
To me, it's every Yankees' God-given right to boo whoever they want. Now, mind you, it is, like you said, Yankee fans are classy. They're some of the most knowledgeable fans in the league.
Well, that's all you hear. And even the players say it. Derek Jeter says it all the time. Our fans are the most knowledgeable. Now it's time for our fans, the Yankee fans, to handle yourselves with class. And I'm not saying don't boo the guy. Okay, you can boo him all you want. But leave the blow-up syringes at home because you know what? You got guys on your own team who've done it. You're going to look stupid.
And not only that, but I think before any Yankee fans do decide to do that, I think the Yankees need to get at least one win against Boston this year.
And that's something else we could talk about, and that's coming up this week. And the one thing I want to talk about before we go to break, Joe, is Andy Pettit. And Andy Pettit, since the All-Star break, has been absolutely ridiculously the Andy Pettit of old in the second half. Now, you know, last year, his second half was brutal. But the years past, before that, Andy Pettit turned on a switch in the second half, and Joe, he is reaching into the past. And look at the numbers. I mean, these numbers with everybody.
Since the All-Star break, Andy Pettit is 1-1 with two no decisions, 26 and two-thirds innings pitched. He's allowed 20 hits, which is a nice ratio, only 7 earned runs, which is a 2.36 ERA, 29 strikeouts to 7 walks, and a .211 batting average against. Those are...
And he's pitched into the 7th inning every game. If you get this from Pettit the rest of the season and in the playoffs and in a game against the Blue Jays when they beat Roy Halladay, that was a tremendous pitching performance. You know when you're a starting pitcher and you know when your opponent is Roy Halladay, you can't let the Blue Jays score more than a run.
Two things you had to like about that performance. One is that, look, in CeCe Sabathia's previous start, he gave up a lot of runs, but he fought through it and got the win, and that was very positive. AJ Burnett, yeah, you're going to have a clunker performance every once in a while, but he is going to be fine. They need Andy Pettit to be Andy Pettit.
That is a tremendous point.
They need Andy Pettit to be Andy Pettit. And the other thing that Yankee fans have to like, Chris, is the fact that they've been knocked over the years that they have not been able to hit. They can hit bad pitching. That's what this team has been knocked for. Their offense comes around and hits bad pitching. Well, now they faced Roy Halladay twice, and he's given up 5 runs against the Yankees twice. And he gave up 3 home runs to the Yankees. And you know what? They hit a pretty damn good pitcher in Roy Halladay.
And as we go to break here, let me remind everybody in our audience that this is the third edition of the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. And it is the third week in a row we are talking about your first place Yankees. We're back right after this.
Want to check out some of the best Yankee blogs on the web? Go to YesNetwork.com and check out their lineup of bloggers. First, it's Keeping Up with the Jones with Kim Jones, The Blob with Bob Lorenz, Off the Wall with Chris Sheeran, Cott's Corner with Jim Cott, The Yes Blog, and many, many more. For the best Yankee coverage on the web, it's YesNetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
And welcome back to the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran along with Joe Auriemma from Parts Unknown in our Yes studios. And Joey, let's touch on the Mets a little bit. I think we have to. We get calls on them all the time. So I just think we owe it to the fans out there to touch. I don't think they're going to like what they hear that's going to come out of both of our mouths. But, I mean, pretty much the New York Post hits the nail right on the head. Horror show. In their game against the Cardinals, this team, it just goes from bad to worse. Luis Castillo is heading into the dugout, and he sprains his ankle, so he's on the shelf now.
Isn't a good sign for Castillo, because anytime, it could be a sprain, it could be a bruise, these guys are out for a month with this Mets medical staff that they have going on.
After grounding out to begin the inning, Castillo stumbled down the stairs in the Mets' dugout, spraining his left ankle. He had to be helped to the clubhouse. He's been the Mets' hottest hitter. He entered last night batting .377 with 11 ribbies and 16 runs in his previous 23 games. Now, this should just show fans right now. Wait till 2010.
Yeah.
I mean, this season is just, it's done. You get Sean, first of all, before you get Sean Green, you get K-Rod, blows the save. He blows a 7-5 lead.
Right, and you get a start out of Johan Santana where he gives up 5 runs, does not look good. You need, at this point, Johan Santana to win games.
And you need K-Rod to especially be K-Rod in these games. He gives up the save. Sean Green comes in, walks the winning run across, then gives up a grand slam to Albert Pujols, a salami. I mean, this Mets team is...
And the news just keeps getting worse. I mean, Reyes is rehabbing. Every time
How long is this guy going to rehab?
Every time we turn around, Reyes is a week away. And now he's back at the doctor. So now his season's in jeopardy. Beltran is still upset with the team because he feels like they strung him along with this injury. And apparently he's 2 weeks away. Are any of these guys going to come back this year? If not, just shut it down. You know what? I've been saying this for weeks. Clean house. Manaea, gone. Manuel, gone. Just anything that had to do with this last regime, just clean house, start fresh,
getting rid of Bernazard was the first thing. I mean, maybe the Wilpons have had enough, and maybe, you know, they're just getting their ducks in a row. They're going to take this season as a wash. And, you know, Joe, we haven't really brought it up the past couple of weeks, but who knows how much the Wilpons were hurt by the whole Bernie Madoff thing.
Oh, I mean, I agree.
Who knows how much money he made off with the Wilpons, and pardon the pun there, and I'm not trying to make fun of the situation, but the deal is, you know, there were certain players out there the Mets could have gone out and grabbed and to improve this team.
Including Manny
such
Ramirez.
Such as Manny Ramirez, such as a Roy Halladay possibly at the trade deadline. We still don't know if that deal was, you know, imminent or true, but I tend to, you know, go with John Heyman because he's not going to just put it out there. He's not a twit head, meaning, you know, someone on Twitter who's just going to throw stuff out there like the twit head who put Austin Jackson went to Cincinnati for Jerry Hairston Jr., which was ridiculously stupid.
Right.
People just want to have the first part of the story. They don't use their head. They use their fingers to do the typing, and they end up looking like complete and total morons, and thank you. But John Heyman, I tend to go with him. And if you have a deal out there to get Roy Halladay, and you have a chance for 2010 to have Halladay and Santana as your 1-2, that's a pretty good 1-2.
That's
right
a
there.
Very good 1-2.
So the Mets, you know,
they're in disarray.
They're just in disarray. I just wanted to touch on them this week because I felt we owed it to people. And please, go to yesnetwork.com, call our call-in number. If you have questions about the Mets, anything in the world of sports, please, by all means, call us up and we will get you on the program. Now, Joe, let's make a nice little transition
to the New York Football Giants.
Now, the Giants made some news recently, and that was the fact that they just, you know, gave Eli Manning a winning lottery ticket. They said, here you go, Eli. You just won $97 million. 35 of it's guaranteed.
6 years.
6 years. Something like $15 million a year is ridiculous.
Yeah, $15.3 million a year. He's the third highest paid player in the NFL.
Now, he's the third highest paid player in the NFL. Do you think he's in the top five in NFL quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think he's... I think for what he gives, I think he's certainly in the top 10. I don't know if he's top five, but he gives that intangible. Ever since the year the Giants won the Super Bowl, he gives that winning intangible. You don't always need to put up the numbers like his brother Peyton to be a winner. Phil Simms didn't always put up those numbers, and he was a winner. And that's what I think Eli Manning has turned into. He's turned into a confident, winning quarterback who... This is his team, Chris.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with Plexico Burress not being on this team anymore. Jeremy Shockey not being on this team anymore. Tiki Barber not being on this team anymore. Because they, to me, they were all me.
That's all they were.
I want the ball. When you have that going on, it's impossible. Be a leader. It's impossible to lead with guys who are like that.
And the Giants made it known that since the Super Bowl run and last year, we understand that this is your team. Everybody on this team now respects you. $97 million is a high price to pay, but by the same token, it also shows the other players on the team that this is truly, he's the guy to go to.
The one thing I have about Eli Manning that you probably will disagree with me, and he did a great job in that playoff run to the Super Bowl, every game on the road, and he performed. He did everything he needed to do to get the Giants to the promised land. Now, the Super Bowl, the last drive was ridiculous. Just a tremendous, well, it was a prayer. It was that catch.
Yeah.
Was a prayer that he threw up there. But that last drive, barring that catch, Manning just did a tremendous job getting the Giants down the field. Here's the thing. You see if you disagree or agree with me. I don't think Manning is a game-changing player. Okay, Plexico Burress is a game-changing player. Big mouth, but a game-changing player. Donovan McNabb, even though I hate to say it because he's an Eagle, is a game-changing player. He could do something. He could get out of the pocket. He could run for 30, 40 yards. He's a game-changing player. Eli Manning is not a game-changing player.
Now, to me, I completely disagree with that point because my whole thing is if you are a leader on the field, in the huddle, on the sidelines, you're a game-changing player.
You could look at it like that.
If you are a guy who's confident in the pocket, can deliver a pass, he's shown that he's big in fourth quarter comebacks. He's poised. He's a winner. If those are all intangibles of being a game-changing player, and that's the way I look at it.
I'm talking about on the field, and you know I'll be the first one to admit when they drafted him and he played his first preseason game And I think, I forget who they were playing, but he got crunched. I mean, he was just so, it looked like he was so tiny. And two players just sandwiched him, and I didn't think he was going to get up. I didn't think this guy was going to be able to lead, you know, ants to an ant hole. I really didn't think he was going to be able to do that. But he has been able to grow. He has been able to grow from the time he came into the league and was thrust into the lineup when Kurt Warner was benched and hurt with all his problems. And that the year the Giants were 5-2 when Eli came in, they didn't make the playoffs. I think they finished 6-10 that year. But since Jeremy Shockey and now Plexico Burress have left this team, I think Manning has grown tremendously. Maturity, leadership qualities, and everything else. But I just don't, I feel very uncomfortable. The Giants have a great team, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the phone call segment. I think the Giants have a great team, but I think they're going to be in trouble without a number one receiver. Eli Manning is going to have to find a go-to guy, and you know, I just hope for the sake of Giant fans out there, including yours truly, that this Hakeem Nicks, who I've been reading about, could turn into a star receiver.
Hakeem Nicks, and they said Mario Manningham has looked great this offseason. It's another guy that they have high hopes in. And Steve Smith.
Steve Smith
has always been that third down go-to guy.
Maybe we can talk about this later in our next segment. We're going to take a break. But the thing with me is, don't show me in training camp. Don't show me in preseason. Show me on the field. And we're going to talk about this more in our phone call segment. And that's next right here on the Off the Wall podcast on YesNetwork.com.
Go to YesNetwork.com for the best Yankee coverage on the web. Insightful blogs, original content, and great video make YesNetwork.com your one-stop source for the 26-time world champions.
Want to have your voice heard? Leave a comment or question on the Yankees and anything else sports-related for Chris at 646-487-3668. And now, back to Off the Wall.
Welcome back to Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. I'm Chris Sheeran, along with Joe Auriemma here. And 646-487-3668. That's 646-487-3668. Get you on the program. That's all you got to do is dial in, leave a message, and we will get you on the show. And our first call this week, Joey, is Laura from Springfield. Laura, take it away.
Hi, Chris. My name is Laura from Springfield, New Jersey, and I was just wondering if the Rays are a threat to win the AL East.
All right, Laura, the Rays...
Sneaky.
Sneaky.
They're sneaky right now.
You don't want to count them out, especially what they did against Boston earlier this week. You know, the bullpen just shut the Sox down. The Sox had a 2-0 lead. Lester pitched a heck of a game, allowed one run, but the Rays were allowed to win it in extra innings. They're right in the thick of things. It's like they're a predator in the weeds. You know, the Yankees really can't take them lightly, especially if David Price decides, oh, yeah, I could pitch. And he starts having a great second half. This team is very, very scary in the second half. This race in the AL East is going to be three horses the rest of the way, not just two. It's not going to be just the Yankees and the Red Sox. I really believe the Rays are a team to be reckoned with.
And they have the experience. The one thing that they haven't had this year is the pitching, the dominant pitching that they had last year, and it's shown. Scott Kazmir is not having a good season. But again, like you said, at any point, if these guys turn it on and they go on a run, they are right there with the Yankees and Red Sox. And Joe Girardi did say in the Joe Girardi Q&A last week, he said that he feels that the AL East is going to have three 90-plus win teams, and which, you know what that means. September 15th on, it's going to be exciting baseball.
Laura, buckle in and be prepared to sit on the edge of your seat because it's going to be a very interesting August and September in the American League East. All right, our next caller here on Off the Wall is Barb from Carmel. Barb, take it away.
Hey, Chris, it's Barb from Carmel. I was just giving a call. I'm a big Giants fan. I was just wondering if you think that the Giants are going to make it to the Super Bowl this year.
All right, a little eclectic taste of calls. Once again, we go to football now, and Barb wants to know about the Giants' Super Bowl chances. And we touched on this in the last segment, and I'll say the same thing I said there. And I just really think someone I think they have the pieces in place. I think their defense is deeper than it's ever been, especially on the defensive line. I mean, that's where they were always light. But Jerry Reese, I got to hand it to this guy. He came in, took over for Ernie Accorsi, and just didn't skip a beat. This Giant team, especially on the defensive side of the ball, is the deepest and the most talented that it's been. I'm not going to say it's as good as the 86 or 90 defenses, but it's pretty damn close to being where they were before the season even starts. Umanure is back. Just imagine if they had Umanure. Now they have Kiwanuka. With Umanure back, Kiwanuka could float around, do whatever the hell he wants, really.
And they solidified their linebacking core with Michael Boley.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's and they have Chris Canty. I mean, it's this is a deep, deep team.
But I think on the offensive side of the ball, I'm not saying it won't happen. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying a receiver won't emerge as a top guy or a number one go-to guy for Eli Manning, but to lose a guy like a Plexico Burress, you saw what happened to the Giants last year. The end of the season and in the playoffs, Eli just had basically nowhere to go with the ball. They still have a great offensive line. They have two formidable running backs. Kevin Boss is a serviceable tight end, if not better. They have to throw to him more, in my opinion. I think
right.
They have to bring that seam pattern back, the one they threw to Bavaro all the time, to open up the offense. And I think the new philosophy of the Giants, if I'm not mistaken, and our good buddy Joe Callow talked about this. He has his own blog.
Football NYC.
Football NYC. You should check that out. Very good.
Also, he's going to be doing just a sidetrack.
A podcast.
Podcast with hopefully This Week in Football's Ross Tucker. That's in the works right now.
All right, cool. That's very nice. But Joe Callow brought this up. To have the running backs, to have the tight end, to have Eli Manning now solidify with his contract, the Giants, and that defense. Now, the only thing, there's two things that worry me about this team, Barb. Two things. And Joe, you could chime in as soon as I'm done telling you what the two things are. One's the receiver, obviously. The other one is the new defensive coordinator. Now, Spagnuolo left. He's the head coach of the Rams. He had to go. He had to do it. He gets $3 million a year. If the Giants stunk this year, his value was going to go down. His stock would have dropped. So he had to do it when he did it. I just hope the system is kept in place and nothing changes. I hope they keep the pressure on the quarterback. Those are the two things. The receiver, the defense is stacked, loaded. But will the philosophy stay the same? That's what worries me.
Well, the one thing I'll say is that I think that when Spagnuolo left, he had a core of coaches around him that know how to run his defense. It's kind of like when Jim Johnson let Spagnuolo go to the Giants. Now Spagnuolo's gone, and I think that the assistants that Spagnuolo have brought in, he's left the defense in good hands. Now, as for the receiver, I'm not as worried because I think that some of these kids are going to emerge. I think that this team has as good a shot to win the Super Bowl as any Giant team in the last 20 years to go into a season and win a Super Bowl, and I still think they are the creme de la creme of the NFC East.
That's probably one of the best divisions still in football, the NFC East. Nothing is going to be handed to the Giants, but I tend to agree with Joey that I think the Giants are still the best team in that division. But we will see. And now Steve Nagy will be chiming in. Steve, a good buddy of mine, an author, and let's see what Steve has to say. Steve?
How you doing, Chris? This is Steve Nagy. I just wanted to comment on the pitching situation. Sergio Mitri has proven that he cannot handle the starting role, and I am just imploring the Yankees to definitely go out there and get a starter in the trades that will be made, that the players have to clear waivers. You know, we definitely need a pitcher. Would have been nice for Washburn. I heard that the Mariners wanted either Austin Jackson or Montoro, so I can see why the Yankees didn't pull the trigger on that, but I'm sure there's a decent pitcher out there that they can pluck. And besides the gal, please, not Sidney Ponce.
Now, Steve, thanks for the call. Your concern is probably the concern of every Yankee fan in the Yankee universe. When Jabba Chamberlain you know, when he gets close to that 160 innings limit, which I keep hearing is still the case, the Yankees aren't going to waver back and forth on that. They're going to keep it to around 160. So he has a couple starts left before they put him in the bullpen. And that 160, that's not a plateau for starting. That's a plateau for the year.
Everything. So that means like around 130, 140, they need to get this guy in the bullpen.
Yeah, and they're going to put him in the bullpen. And, you know, they're not – listen, a lot of people think they're going to take Phil Hughes out of the bullpen and put him back into the rotation. Joe, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I think right now that's stupid. I think Hughes has so much confidence as a reliever, and he could just gas himself up. If you have – Chamberlain and Hughes, or Hughes and Chamberlain and Rivera, in any kind of order, of course, with Mo being
with the
ninth,
yeah.
Right. But if you put Hughes and Chamberlain in any kind of order, 7, 8, 9, just when Jabba knows he could gas, and when Hughes knows he could gas, tell me another back end of the bullpen that's as nasty as that can be. You have Coke that could be your lefty specialist. If Marte gets his act together and gets up here, he could help, but he's just not.
And Bruni needs to get his act.
Well, Bruni, I don't know.
I will say this: I don't think the plan is to put Phil Hughes back in the rotation.
Well, all right,
I think if they're going to put someone back in the rotation, I think even though his shoulder's barking a little bit,
Ace.
Alfredo Aceves. This is a guy who's already been stretched out. This is a guy that's given you multiple roles, including the long man in the rotation. I think he's going to be that Ramiro Mendoza type starter, where if they need him to go in the rotation, they're going to put him in the rotation.
All right, if Ace isn't the place, there's a couple of names being thrown out there, you know, the waiver trade deadline, which is August 31st. Doug Davis from the Diamondbacks is out there. Aaron Harang, who looked awful the other day in his start. Bronson Arroyo. I mean, is there any guy that you would go out there and make a deal for to bring in here, or would you just try to keep it in-house, Joe?
The one guy that might clear through waivers that I do like.
Roy Halladay?
he's not clearing through waivers. But who's got playoff experience, I kind of feel like is John Garland.
That's a name I've heard also. I forgot. Thank you for bringing him up. I would be very comfortable with Garland. I would be absolutely 100% comfortable with Garland.
Garland could come in here. This guy has been on winning teams. He always gives solid performances. I think that's a name that definitely has to be brought up here. You certainly can't bring up Kei Igawa, because you bring up Igawa, you also bring up his salary. You put him on the 40-man roster, and guess what? That's where you get hit with the luxury tax. So,
well,
I don't think we're going to be seeing Igawa, the all-time leading
game
winner in International League history.
Which is a very dubious honor, if you think about it. What is it, 27 wins he has?
27. It might be more than that.
It might
now.
Be more now, but that's really something you don't want to have.
And I was not impressed with Josh Towers down in the minors.
And Ian Kennedy, good news, Ian Kennedy from his aneurysm surgery, the same doctor who performed David Cone's aneurysm surgery did Kennedy's, and Kennedy is throwing off a flat mound, and he's going to play in a winter ball league in Puerto Rico. And that's going to wrap up our call segment. When we come back, we will wrap up this third edition of the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com.
Want to check out some of the best Yankee blogs on the web? Go to YesNetwork.com and check out their lineup of bloggers. First, it's Keeping Up with the Jones with Kim Jones, The Blob with Bob Lorenz, Off the Wall with Chris Sheeran, Cott's Corner with Jim Cott, The Yes Blog, and many, many more. For the best Yankee coverage on the web, it's YesNetwork.com.
And now, back to a bald host that doesn't get any respect, Chris Sheeran.
Life ain't easy.
I mean, nothing works, sir. You had to start to look out for number one, and I stepped to number two.
And welcome back to Off the Wall, the podcast version here on YesNetwork.com. It's time for Joey and I to wrap things up, put a nice little bow tie on this third version of the podcast here on YesNetwork.com. And what we're going to do to wrap up this week is do a little segment called In the News, and you can catch some of these stories with Teddy Spicer on the Weekly Dish on YesNetwork.com as well, but we're going to shed our own little jokes and comedy on these stories. And Joe, take us through the first one.
All right, the first one is the all-important story of Tiger Woods. You know, this guy is always in the media, and now we have Fartgate.
Interesting. Flatulent humor always popular.
Tiger Woods wins the Buick Open, the last Buick Open, with a score of 20 under par, and goes up to his caddy, Steve Williams, lifts his leg, and rips one for all to hear, including the mics and the cameras. So this has become a national story about Tiger Woods letting his flatulence go.
Well, you know, I have no problem with this because, you know, when you grow up in a house with two brothers and a dad and mom, I mean, mom had nothing to do with it, but, you know, like Eddie Murphy said, you used to walk around the house farting and, you know, your brother's face, that was a good one, my mouth was open on that one. I have no problem with that. I mean, the guy makes how many millions of dollars? He can basically do whatever he wants. And it goes along the lines of, you know, when the President of the United States does something, oh, you know, President Obama, was on the toilet today.
He drank beer. I mean, that was another.
It's going to be news. So when Tiger Woods lets out a fart, guess what? That's news.
So the T.O. show, the highly promoted T.O. show.
I'm a big fan.
The reality show. It just seems that they keep making reality shows with these sports stars. In fact, Shaq's going to have one called Shaq Versus.
I love Shaq, though. Shaq is funny. Shaq's the guy you want to hang out with.
Going back to T.O., his T.O. show that was highly promoted tied this week in the ratings.
First?
For 798 last week with a rerun episode of The Fresh Prince
of Bel-Air. And why wouldn't
it? Yeah.
That is tremendous television.
Yes. So there we go for T.O. Next, we have Lendale White. Lendale White in the news this week. This guy's always in the news. Lendale White saying that he shed more than 30 pounds in 6 months.
Right.
This offseason.
Skipping the buffet, right?
Not the buffet. Staying away from tequila.
Oh, God.
All right. Well, he shed more than 30 pounds staying away from tequila. So... I don't know.
Come on. He had to stay away. Look, tequila is, as Rick James said about cocaine, tequila is a hell of a drug. Next.
Next, we have a Pens fan. This guy from Dayton, Ohio.
Right.
A huge Pens fan went to go see the Pens defeat the Detroit Red Wings at the Joe Louis Arena. Started taking pictures when they won the cup. Got closer and closer to the ice, somehow got on ice level, sans the security, gets out on the ice, starts taking pictures of his favorite players.
In Detroit.
Then realizes that the security is...
so lax.
That he went into... this is just a Penguins fan. So this is like me going into the Devils locker room if they win another Stanley Cup, or you going into the Garden locker room when and if the Rangers ever win.
40 years.
Another Stanley Cup. Yeah. So he just goes into the locker room and decides, I'm going to take pictures. I'm going to get autographs. He took a picture with Mario Lemieux.
And the piece de resistance, Joe.
And he gets a picture of himself. One of the Penguins hands him the Stanley Cup. And he's got it hoisted over his head.
That's a great job by him. I mean, wouldn't you do it if you were like that big of a fan and you were there in Detroit rooting your team on and you were actually on the ice? Wouldn't you keep pushing the envelope until you were pushed off?
Of course.
That's a great job by him. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Off the Wall podcast. For Joe Auriemma, this is Chris Sheeran. Please keep coming back and checking us out here on YesNetwork.com. There's just a bevy of information, a bevy of video. There's just a bevy of everything sports related here at YesNetwork.com. So keep checking back from time to time. And also, don't forget the Weekly Dish with Teddy Spicer, the Football NYC blog with Joe Callow, which is getting underway with football getting underway, training camps. And also look for Joe Auriemma and I's trip through Yankees 3 minor league teams, single A, double A, triple A. In a single day. That's also going to be up there very soon. For Joe Auriemma, I'm Chris Sheeran, wrapping up this edition of Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com.
Log on to YesNetwork.com for the best Yankees coverage on the web. And Come back every Wednesday for a new edition of Off the Wall with Chris Shear.